so I want to talk about then your fatal flaw, right? So just like every Superman has his kryptonite, or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad, you probably had something that has held you back, a flaw. And for me, it was a couple of things, right? I struggled with perfectionism for a long time, right? Can't ship it unless it's perfect. Another one that I struggled with is lack of self-care, right? I think more important than what the flaw is, have you worked to overcome it so you can continue to grow your company and achieve the mission that you guys are striving for?
For me, I'm actually a recovering alcoholic. Taking a step back, my kryptonite, if you will, but it actually can be used for the good as well, is I have a very addictive, like chemically addictive genetic system. It's in my family. My father was, I just referred to, is not a recovering alcoholic, but alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. So it's this generational curse, if you will. And I also was a drug addict as well. That certainly caused a lot of challenge in my youth. I had a hard time realizing that I had a problem with alcohol, because when I thought of an alcoholic, I thought of someone who didn't have a job, was living under a bridge, drinking every day out of a brown paper bag, and their life was absolutely in shambles. I was more of a binge drinker. I would always get my things done during the week, but I use as a coping mechanism from a genetic disposition. When I have one drink, I can't stop at one. It just ultimately continues on. And so it took me a little while, well through my 20s, up until I was about 33, to have a full understanding that I actually have an issue with alcohol. It's different than what I perceived. But it can definitely be, if I would have continued on that path, I wouldn't be on this conversation today. I wouldn't be a successful entrepreneur. I would not be a successful CEO. In fact, I probably wouldn't be married to my wife, Tatiana. So thankfully, by the grace of God, I had a moment of awakening, seeing a loved one, a family member, go through a very challenging situation with the same issue that I did.
Are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell, from the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome back to the Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having Bryce Henson on the line. Bryce, are you there?
I'm here, Richard. Thanks so much for having me on.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. I know we've been chatting just a little bit before we got started. You're coming in from California right now, Los Angeles?
That's right. Yeah, close to where you were from originally. Oh, kindred spirits.
Right near my hometown there. My favorite part about California is the amazing weather that I miss whenever we're not there.
It is beautiful. Today it's a little rainy in February, but in the grand scheme of things, we cannot complain, because to your point, it's beautiful here for sure.
Yeah. And we went to California for the holidays, like over Christmas and New Year's, and all the way up through like February. What is it? We just left, and it spent like 4 weeks while we were there raining. And I was like, I came to visit California for the holidays so it wouldn't rain. And here it is. Raining on us the whole time. So it didn't work out the way that I normally want it to, but that's how it goes.
Yep.
So what I want to do before we get too far into our interview is I always like to do a brief introduction for our guests, for our audience who doesn't know who you are. So Bryce is the CEO of Fit Body Bootcamp, the world's fastest growing fitness bootcamp franchise, having over 10 years of experience in the fitness industry and owning two FBBC locations. His passion is spreading fitness to the world, in addition to mentoring fitness professionals on how to grow their business and change more lives in their local communities. And I know we want to talk a little bit about some of your guys' core missions about promoting capitalism, teaching leadership, and defending free speech today. So before we get too far into the interview, I always like to ask this question, and it's basically, what are you known for? Right? And it just sets up who you are. What's your business like? Who do you serve? What do you do for them?
Ooh. I would say personally, I'm probably known for fitness and leadership. Those are two skill sets that I've been able to acquire over the last 20 years now in the working world. But Fit Body Bootcamp, as you just mentioned, we're an international fitness brand. We're based in Los Angeles. We have nearly 300 locations throughout North America. About 90% of those are in the States. About 10% are in Canada. And our mission as a company is to inspire fitness and change lives every day. And more than a tagline, this is our life's work. So what we do specifically, how we deliver that, is through group coaching sessions. So instead of hiring a personal trainer one-on-one, which gets great results, but a lot of times it's cost prohibitive, you can join our program and get a certified personal trainer enter a community of people. And instead of one-on-one training, you do that in a group environment. So you have more energy and build more community. You also can get that level of personal training at a discount rate. So it's a huge win. And fitness and fat loss specifically is our focus. That's how we're helping our communities and helping shape the fitness industry. And to put a bow on it, sadly, especially after COVID and isolation, nearly 80% of our population is statistically either obese or overweight. And what's worse, Richard, 20% of our child population is obese. And really, that's just kids learning the habits that their parents are adopting. So we have a big mission to help combat that and really making sure that our communities throughout the country and world are healthy and fit.
I love that as a mission. I know obesity is one of those problems that, like, there's no such thing as old fat people. Like, people don't get to live long, healthy lives. And so you have to fix that problem if you want to live long and healthy. And I know, like, personally, you talked about personal trainers. I just hired a personal trainer last year. So like January, February of last year. So I've been 4 days a week with personal trainer in the martial arts world for about a year now. The results are astounding when you actually put in the work. I was trying to go in the other direction. I was always been scrawny. So I was trying to put muscle on. I managed about 7 pounds of muscle in the last year, which has changed the way my body looks quite a lot. And man, for me, having someone, whether it's individual coach like we're doing or a group coach like you're talking about, it was like two things for me. It's on my calendar. And if I don't show up, other people are going to miss me. That there's like that social component of other people are expecting me to show up here. Right. And when I tried to do for years, like showing up and doing my own, like workout on my own, it's really easy to just not show up for yourself. Right. Because the only person you're disappointing is you.
Yes.
And then the other part of it that I really wasn't expecting was having someone push you past your own limits. Right. Because again, like when I try to do things with myself or work out on my own, I wouldn't push past where the pain was. Right. And then you'd never get any of the growth, never get any improvements because you would never really push past your own limits. And in order to grow, you have to, even if it's just a little bit, you have to push past your own limits to move the needle. And having a coach has radically changed the way that my outcomes in fitness.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. And that doesn't surprise me. One, accountability is what I heard there. And we all need accountability in other aspects of life. And there's no better way to get another human to hold you accountable. Because the second point that you just mentioned is really the fact that we're tribal. So we have a hard time disappointing other people. We disappoint ourselves way more than we do other people. It's that, you know, kind of tribal element that we ultimately, our species thrive from. But we need to use that and leverage that and take that to our advantage. And you do that by hiring an accountability coach. And then lastly, the big value that I heard from you is really the accountability coach is a guide. You, just like if you're traveling, which I know you're on a big tour right now, but if you're traveling abroad in a country like China, for example, if you don't speak Chinese, it's probably a good idea when you get to China to hire a guide because the guide can give you the path and where you need to go. And that's the same with fitness or business or anything that you're trying to learn. Getting a guide, getting a coach and creating accountability through that coach will definitely create those results.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like there's all sorts of things you don't know until you hire a coach who tells you all the things you don't know. And you're like, oh,
that's pretty humbling, right?
So it's been a really exciting experience for me because, you know, I'm a CEO and we have the resources to do that. You're right. It's expensive to go that route. I know that's not a reality for a lot of people. So what you guys are doing to be able to make that same sort of experience available to people is really cool and very needed. My next question for you then is, how did you get here? We talked on this show about your origin story, right? Every good comic book hero has an origin story, and it's the thing that made them into here you are today. And when I hear that story, were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to start fitness boot camps through the world? Or did you start in a job and eventually move to becoming a coach? Basically, where'd you come from and how did you get this company off the ground?
I love this. I'm actually going to go deep for a second just so you feel or hear the original origin story, and then I'll take us through the career origin story. But while I've lived in Southern California for the last 20 years, I'm originally from the Midwest, or at least I grew up. But my first 10 years, I actually grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was a very volatile time frame. My father was a drug addict, addicted to gambling and alcohol. Not necessarily the trifecta for a good family upbringing. Because of that, things were volatile. And we used to run out of money before we used to run out of month. Thankfully, my mom decided to get us out of that situation. And we landed in the state of Michigan where she grew up. And if it wasn't my grandma, we would have probably been in a shelter or worse. So that was really the baseline level of my kind of upbringing in the world. And while that was challenging in many ways, it actually taught me awareness. It taught me what I didn't want to be in terms of father figure, role model figure. So there was a lot of value from that, even though it was challenging at the time. So that was really what shaped my early years and also too, my drive to be successful, my drive to be a man of means. But then to your point, as you know, I went through it in high school and college, I wasn't a fitness guy at all. So it's comical that a CEO of an international fitness brand used to be allergic to lifting weights is like what I used to like to joke around with. And fast food, specifically Taco Bell, is a staple in my diet up until I was about 23 years old. So that was the backstory. But then when I moved out west, initially it was an internship, which then landed me or became a full-time sales job, if you will. I lived with more dark days than good for the couple of years of my entrance to Los Angeles. But then a fortuitous situation happened. We were just talking about accountability and hiring a guide and a coach. One of my best friends from college, who was my first fitness mentor, his name was Adam. He moved out west and we lived together for a period of 2 years where I trained with him, but really hyper-focused over 6 months. He introduced me to lifting weights. He introduced me to circuit training and clean nutrition, but most importantly, coaching and accountability. Because without that, I don't think I would be able to look you in the eye, Richard, and say, hey, I would have done this on myself. But over 6 months, I dropped 20 pounds of body fat. I put 20 pounds of lean muscle. But as we know from fitness, yes, it gives you an aesthetic look, but it does way more than that. And it changed my life. It gave me energy, enthusiasm. I went from the least performing sales rep in my company all the way to the highest performing sales rep in my company. Really only one thing that had changed was really my level of fitness. And that was really the foundation, which really opened my eyes to the fact of, hey, maybe I can be a fitness coach. Maybe I can give back to other people. That was really the catalyst that started my journey in the fitness career or fitness industry, which I'm happy to give you any more information that you're looking for.
I've got a couple of ferrets that are running around under my legs here, and they decided they were going to have a battle, and I was trying not to have them interrupt your...
appreciate it.
But the thing that sticked out to me in your story was when you get fit, how it changes how you are capable of showing up for everything that you do, right? It changes your baseline for performance. It was actually, for me, it was one of the reasons why I was trying to shift gears on my own fitness journey. I've always been, what would you call it? Accidentally healthy, right? The benefit of good genes kind of thing. And hypermetabolism, pretty lean. And the only thing I ever had a problem with is I could never like put on muscle. So when I started wanting to get in my fitness journey, my coach sat down and he was like, what are your goals? And I was like, fit young forever, right? That's what I want, right? I want to be able to keep up with my teenage children who are growing up right now and not just keep up with them, but outpace them as long as possible and know that I don't have to go off the getting older thing where like all your performance starts to drop. That's a choice. It's a choice that we make. Mm-hmm. And it's a choice that the longer you wait to implement, the harder it is to fix. So like for me, I've noticed in the last year since we made that shift, we 8.5x our company last year. Right? I couldn't have managed that like with my previous body, right? I just didn't have the energy to show up for that. So the energy for you gain by getting yourself fit allows you to show up at a higher rate at every single thing that you do. So your kids, your family, your life, your business, everything, you can show up better, faster, stronger. You think better, you ideate better. Like it's unbelievable. And it's the kind of thing that like I would have poo-pooed before. And like, you know, I'm fairly healthy. I'm fairly fit. Why should I put the effort into becoming a peak performer? Because it's a lot of work. When you realize like the difference between being at 80% and being at 95, 100% of your performance capacity is ungodly, right? It's amazing. And I don't know how to describe that for people who haven't experienced it, but maybe you teach this. Maybe you could describe it better than I just did.
Well, I mean, it's anecdotal experience, Richard. You're absolutely right. And yes, it's initially people want the aesthetic look, the physicality, the change in their body, but really long-term. And when I shared with you my origin story, this was in 2007. We're shooting this in 2024. So this is nearly 20 years later. The biggest reason I keep on going back to fitness is the mental clarity. It's the energy. You show up as a different person. And I know, Richard, your big passion is really to kind of shine a positive light on CEOs and change makers and entrepreneurs. Actually, my doctor is a high performance health coach, and she's done a lot of research. CEOs and leaders and people that have stressful jobs from a physical perspective, you actually need to be more physically fit than someone, you know, that doesn't have a stressful job. Not only will show up the quality of your engagements, the output, the energy, the ability for you to be a stronger leader, have more conviction, but physically, you just actually need to be stronger the more stress that you take on, especially if you're a leader or a change maker, an entrepreneur or CEO. So there's just so many benefits, and it gets me excited to hear that you're on your fitness journey. You gain 7 pounds of muscle, which is super important because as we get older, our muscle atrophies, and muscle is so important for lifelong health. So good on you. And that inspires me as I try to inspire other people.
Yeah, I know. One of the things that like has really struck me was as you start getting good in the fitness world, the performance world there, it allows you to move into and out of performance modes more quickly when you're in other areas like sales or speaking or networking engagements. A lot of things that we do as entrepreneurs is you have to be able to switch on the performance mode. The performance mode is a default that you're building all like the muscle memory for it in your fitness journey. So you're building all the pathways for it. I've noticed for me, it's a lot easier to both shift into performance mode and then when I'm done, be able to shift out of it and back into like family mode or other things with a lot more and just ease than before I started the fitness journey. There's a lot of benefits to it outside of looking good naked, which of course we all want.
Yeah, there's benefits all around. That certainly is one of them. But to your point, from a business perspective, and it's interesting, I just read this stat to put a bow on this. The person who is healthy weight and has lean muscle mass, they actually earn 28% more than someone who's overweight or statistically obese. So my response, especially when clients are like, hey, Bryce, I can't afford to be fit. My response is you can't afford not to be fit. So invest in your fitness. It's an investment that's going to pay dividends long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Dividends long term and also like lengthen the amount of long term you have, which I think is an important part.
Amen.
I want to talk a little bit then about your superpowers, right? Every iconic hero has a superpower, whether that's a fancy flying suit made by your genius intellect or your ability to call down thunder from the sky, or, you know, Superman has his super strength. In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or that you developed over the course of your career that really sets you apart, allows you to help your people slay their villains, come on top of their journeys. And the way I like to frame it for my guests is if you look at the skills you developed over your career, there's probably a common thread that ties all of those skills together. And so with that framing, what do you think your superpower is in your business?
Well, I would say probably the skill that I've developed to become a superpower is my ability to lead other people and a massive organization. So leadership, for me, it's always the problem and always the solution, especially for entrepreneurs. So I've been able to develop that specifically zone of genius. But taking a step back more authentically and ingrained, I feel for whatever reason, I'm a man of inspiration and I've been told by many people that I inspire other people. So I think it's just the way they attack life. I love working out. I love fitness. I love being a hands-on leader. I love connecting. I love people. So these are all things that I think I do well that really allow me to engage, connect, inspire, ultimately lead myself, lead my team, lead my family, and lead my empire.
So I have a question about that because leadership is one of those things that I think people don't realize can be a double-edged sword. So like I always talk in this sort of frame that persuasion is like the baseline tool. Right? That's what leadership is. It's a type of persuasion. And it's like a hammer, right? You can use persuasion. You build a house or bash someone's head in. So I always looked at leadership is when you use the tool of persuasion for the benefit of either mutual benefit of yourself and others or for the benefit of others. And then manipulation is when you use that same tool for the benefit of just yourself to the detriment of others. I'm just curious how that sort of plays into your thoughts on leadership.
Ooh, Richard, we're going deep here, which I completely agree with you. Something I always say that's a very unpopular opinion, but Adolf Hitler was an incredible leader. He was a horribly evil man, but he was actually a really good leader. He could influence. You use the word persuasion. I use the word influence. So if you could influence others, and typically leadership, you're influencing someone's thoughts or ideas or actions. When you're selling something, example, you're still influencing or persuading, but you're selling more in a transactional way. So these are all their cousins, if you will. But it can be a double-edged sword, but I'm under the belief that I would like to think I'm a very good person. I learned a lot of good qualities from a moral fabric from my mother, who's just an incredible soul. So I've been able to learn a lot of her lessons, glean a lot of things on how to be a good person, how to lead with moral authority, and then use that element of influence, persuasion, of leadership towards the good. But I think to your point, it's a tool and it's actually neutral upon itself. It can be used for the good or bad. I just choose good.
So when it comes to leadership for your company, what do you think, where does it show its face, like as the most important sort of aspect of what you're doing? Is it in leading your team? Is it in like leading your students to do the right things, to get the right body? Like, where do you see like the biggest impact of leadership in your business?
Top down. If you think about leadership, really, I think there's a void of leadership because I just talked about this from a health and fitness perspective. 80% of our population is statistically obese or overweight, which shows that we need more leadership, more people leading themselves to better, healthier, and fit lifestyles. Because we talked about the big benefits. It's not even just about the benefit for you. It's about the ripple effect that you have other people. So just leadership is so important. When you think of our coaches, as an example, at our Fit Body Bootcamp locations across North America, they're leading themselves on their own fitness journey because they need to be fit and healthy and active so they can inspire and lead others, because really they're leading our global clients. So Mrs. Jones is our female avatar. Mr. Jones is our male avatar. Our fitness coaches are leading Mr. and Mrs. Jones to better quality of life. For me at HQ and our business coaches here, our business coaches are supporting, are pouring in, are leading our franchise partners so that way they can have all the tools and the resources to be able to coach their team so their coaches can go ahead and lead Mr. and Mrs. Jones. So it's a top-down effect that trickles to the organization and also comes up the organization. For me, my big focus is leading myself, because there's no way that I'm have influence on my team here at HQ, on my business coaches, on my franchise partners, and ultimately my clients, unless I can lead myself. Then once I can lead myself, then I'm in a better position to lead my family. And when I'm in a better position to lead my family, then I can lead my organization or empire. So that's the framework in terms of how I see leadership. And it's just an incredible skill. And to put a bow on this, Richard, when I first got in the entrepreneur space, I talked a little bit about my origin story. I ended up becoming a Fitbody Bootcamp owner is how I entered the brand back in 2012. I was super excited to own my own business. And we talked a little bit about offline, your five versions of freedom. I wanted financial freedom. I wanted time freedom. I wanted all these freedoms. But what I realized about a year and a half in the business is running a business is complex. You have to run the marketing, the sales, the operations, the finance. There's so many skill sets. What I realized about 2 years of my journey is if I can just be a better leader, if I can learn the skill of influence, of persuasion, of leadership, then I can assemble a team of people who are subject matter experts that are better than me at their zone of genius. And then I can lead an organization. We can have a big impact and really fulfill our mission, inspiring fitness and changing lives. So I know I just was passionate about that, but that's really what leadership means to me and the value that it has in on my life, on my team's life, my organization's life, and humanity's life.
Yeah. And to that end, you know, one of the messages of our show here is the idea that entrepreneurs are putting their value forward and changing the world for the better. I love that leadership has, in whatever world you're in, your world's fitness, it has ripple effects that are significantly beyond the surface level of whatever it is you're doing, right? So as you talked about, 80% of the US is statistically obese. If you shift that, not just for this generation, but for the next, right? And it starts impacting our children and it starts impacting the health of our nation going forward. And so any sort of dent you make in that is all of that starts with leadership, right? And the ability to step up and say, hey, we can do something about this. We can make this better. We can adjust the trajectory of an entire country, right? By fixing people's fitness journeys. And so I just want to underscore leadership is, it's one of those words that is thrown around a lot, but I don't think people see how big the impact can be when it's done well.
I would so agree. And I didn't even have that visibility up until a couple of years of my journey as well. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. And the better leaders that we are of ourselves, then just everything works out. So appreciate that you really hit compounding that point.
Awesome. So I want to talk about then your fatal flaw, right? So if your superpower is, you know, leadership and stuff we're talking about, the fatal flaw is the opposite, right? The flip side of that coin. And just like every Superman has his kryptonite, or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad, you've probably had something that has held you back, a flaw. And for me, it was a couple of things, right? I struggled with perfectionism for a long time, right? Can't ship it unless it's perfect. And then if you don't ship anything, then you're not actually doing anything. So what the hell was the point of perfection? And another one that I struggled with, and we talked about this a little bit, was lack of self-care, right? And that it was in more than just the fitness, not having good boundaries with my clients, not having good boundaries with my time. I once tried to work not sleeping for 3 days because I figured I could work more. That doesn't work out well, in case you're wondering.
Yeah.
I was puking in the bushes by day three. Yeah. I think more important than what the flaw is, have you worked to overcome it so you could continue to grow your company and achieve the mission that you guys are striving for?
Richard, I love this conversation. I love this theme, and it's a great trajectory for a conversation. For me, I'm actually a recovering alcoholic, taking a step back, my kryptonite, if you will, but it actually can be used for the good as well, is I have a very addictive, like chemically addictive genetic system. And I'm a recovering alcoholic. It's in my family. My father was, I just referred to, is not a recovering alcoholic, but alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. So it's this generational curse, if you will. And I also was a drug addict as well. That certainly caused a lot of challenge in my youth. Now, it's interesting. I had a hard time realizing that I had a problem with alcohol, because when I thought of an alcoholic, I thought of someone who didn't have a job, was living under a bridge, drinking every day out of a brown paper bag, and their life was absolutely in shambles. That was actually never me. I was more of the binge drinker. I would always get my things done during the week, but I use as a coping mechanism. But for whatever reason, from a genetic juxtaposition, when I have one drink, I can't stop at one. It just ultimately continues on. And so it took me a little while, well through my 20s, up until I was about 33, to have a full understanding that, you know what, I actually have an issue with alcohol. It's different than what I perceive, but it can definitely be, if I would have continued on that path, I wouldn't be on this conversation today. I wouldn't be a successful entrepreneur. I would not be a successful CEO. In fact, I probably wouldn't be married to my wife, Tatiana. So thankfully, by the grace of God, I had a moment of awakening, seeing a loved one, a family member, go through a very challenging situation with the same issue that I did. it was just this big wake-up call. And the wake-up call was, Bryce, you probably aren't be able to physically do anything to help this person remove alcohol from their life. However, you can actually take the spotlight on you. You can discipline your disappointment and you can take the higher road. I guess big aha happened in December of 2016. So at the time of recording, about 7 years ago, and I'm thankful I was able to get accountability coach, go into a program to help me. And I've abstained since. It's been an incredible journey. So to put a bow on it, I would say addiction and my alcoholism is definitely my kryptonite, but it also can be used, now I've channeled to the good, to be addicted to working out, to reading, to growing. So it can, kind of like leadership, it can be a double-edged sword. And I choose that double-edged sword, if you will, towards the light.
Yeah, it's an inspiring story, but it's also something that's not uncommon, or particularly like the point where you're making, you're like, I didn't think I was an alcoholic because I didn't look like the picture I had in my head of what an alcoholic looked like. I think that's a common story for people in the US in particular, that we drink a lot as a society, you know, every Friday night and, you know, on Sundays, whenever we get together with our friends for football games or whatever, there's a lot of alcohol that gets passed around. And We may not even realize the damage that we're doing to ourselves or the addiction that it's capable of imparting on us. And so I want to shift the conversation just a little bit into the actual health side of alcohol. I think it's something that people don't really understand, is that alcohol, in no matter the quantities, is always a poison to your body. So if you are drinking it and you are trying to get fit, you are having to do extra work than someone who is not, right? Because you have to overcome the sort of digging a hole that you have to fill up to get out of the poison that you're doing. So that's not my expertise, but where does that fit in for like your guys's coaching and the health side of actually helping someone get fit?
Such a great question. It's interesting. You have the physical element of alcohol and then you have the social element of alcohol. And I'm not here to hit on my high horse and say, and shame anyone for drinking alcohol. At the end of the day, if you can drink like a gentleman or a gentlewoman within moderation, okay, socially, that's acceptable. However, to your point, there's also a physical element at play. It's interesting, Richard, while you were talking through, the first thought in my mind when I think of alcohol, what it actually is, it's a poison to your system. So there's studies that went out years ago saying, hey, it's good to drink a glass or two of red wine a night. There's some benefits in terms of, I guess, how wine is sourced, but the actual alcohol in of itself, there is no benefit of drinking alcohol. In fact, it hurts your body. It hurts your immune system. It hurts your recovery. It hurts your sleep. People say, oh, I can sleep better. No, it's actually proven you can fall asleep better, but the actual rest that you're receiving when you're asleep is not there at all. So if you drink more than two or three cocktails a night, your sleep is going to be interrupted. Then what's going to happen is then you wake up, you feel lethargic, you're foggy, and then you're going to make bad choices in terms of maybe you're going to miss the gym, or maybe you're going to pick up the piece of sugar instead of the lean, healthy meal. So it has a ripple effect of very bad effects on your body. I'm thankful there's more research and studies showing and really advising against alcohol consumption. So that's my stance on it from a health and fitness perspective. It can be a very dangerous thing long-term that really impacts people's health, people's longevity, people's quality of life long-term.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at with it too. I've never really been much of an alcohol drinker. I don't make a very good adult because I don't like coffee and I don't like tea and I don't like alcohol. I always tease, like, I'm not the most fun person to go out with because I don't drink adult beverages. But to that point, the primary reason why I've always skipped alcohol was the health aspect of it. It felt like if I want to be fit young forever, it seemed counterintuitive to me to take things that were not helping in that regard, that had a negative impact that I have to overcome. My encouragement for people is certainly, if you want to have the social drink every now and then, do it. I do occasionally have a drink with someone when we're out doing something, but it shouldn't be a baseline if your goal is to be healthy and to be a high performer and to really show up and give your value to the world. Alcohol is always going to be something that you're going to have to overcome the negative balance it puts in your health account, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of that equation. And the more of it you drink, the more you have to overcome that negative balance. So there's just a reality to that. Regardless how we feel about it socially, that's a choice. I'm making this choice. And now you have to do the extra work to overcome that, whatever it is.
It's so true. And it's kind of like sugar. At the end of the day, sugar is not good for you, especially eaten and consumed in any sort of large quantity. You can argue how great sugar is, how great it tastes. And the other, hey, more power to you. I agree with you. At the end of the day, though, it's still hurting your health and fitness. And that's the same with alcohol. You can argue about it till you're blue in the face, but if you're consuming more than a drink or two with any sort of frequency, it's hurting your health and fitness.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. Sugar is more addictive than alcohol. If you talk to someone about this, you can see this. If you want to go experiment with someone, like you can do this today, go to one of your friends who drinks alcohol and it has sugar and say, hey, how would you feel about giving up alcohol versus giving up cookies? And they'll be like, they can consider giving up alcohol, but if you tell them they're going to give up cookies, they're like, no, that's retarded. Like, no one would ever give up cookies because it's an extremely addictive substance. It's harder to break for most people than something like alcoholism. And it's also, I think, a more common addiction. So you mentioned having an addiction problem with alcohol. An addiction problem with sugar is that's the actual cause of the obesity pandemic in the United States is sugar addiction. So I think that's, what are your thoughts on that? I know you just mentioned a little bit, but do you want to talk about that?
You are spot on, Richard. It's crazy. In fact, the way my body consumes alcohol, I would say, like reading studies, about 90% of the human population can drink alcohol and not develop a craving and take or leave a drink, even though socially it's kind of part of the equation. But from an actual addiction perspective, only less than 10% have a genetic disposition. So it's really sometimes hard for someone who doesn't have an issue with alcohol to really understand how if you drink a little bit of alcohol, my body metabolizes it and wants more, craves more. But Richard, to your point, when I share the example analogy on sugar, hey, have you had a little bit of sugar before? And then when you have a little bit of sugar, what happens? We're like, most people like, I want a little bit more. I have a piece of candy and the next thing you know, the whole bag's gone. I was like, that is how my body actually metabolizes alcohol. But that also shows how dangerous sugar is. So to that point, it actually is a great way for me to use an analogy and metaphor for someone who doesn't have an understanding of an alcohol addiction, but then really reinforces the danger of sugar. So we are definitely aligned in both sugar and alcohol. If you can remove and, you know, eliminate's a hard, yes, but if you can dramatically remove those from your life, you're going to definitely be better off from a health, from a fitness, from a mental clarity and energy level.
So I want to flip this on its head a little bit. And because one of the things that people talk about is I want to be completely cut out sugar from my life, completely cut out alcohol from my life. I'm going to be fit and have all these things. And while that's a perfect ideal, right? Like maybe you have 100% healthy choices all the time. That's not really a reality for most people, especially with the world that we live in today. One of the things that I have learned from almost all the fitness professionals I've ever talked with or worked with is the healthier your body is as a baseline, the better it is at handling the occasional sugar bout or the occasional alcohol thing and not have a detrimental impact on your health. Whereas if your health baseline is like way down here versus like you're operating at peace fitness most of the time, and you know, you have a cheat day here or there, your body can handle that and recover from it and fix any of the problems with it. It's just operating at peak efficiency all the time. How does that fit into your fitness journey that you teach people?
Yeah. I mean, 80-20, right? No one's perfect. That was your own kind of issue with being an entrepreneur. Perfection doesn't happen in life. So no one is perfect. No one eats clean 100% of the time. I don't. I'm a fitness professional. I'm in really good shape, but I don't. But do I eat clean 80% or 90% of the time? Absolutely. So I like to refer to the 80-20 rule. And at our locations across the board, we have a proper nutrition coaching program with nutritionists on the back end, with weekly check-ins, with an application to get really dialed in. But just generally speaking, as a piece of strong advice, 80% of the time, pick healthy and lean meals, good fruits and vegetables, organic as much as possible. And then 20% of the time, you can have your sugar and splurge, et cetera. And that keeps your sanity long-term. And that's more of a sustainable plan for most people. But to your point, the healthier you are, the quicker your recovery, the quicker you rebound. And the opposite is also true. If your diet is 80% sugar and fast food and processed foods, then you're just going to have a hard time moving forward with any nutrition you put in your body. So I definitely agree with you, but I think as a general recommendation from a target perspective, give yourself some grace, but 80% of the time should focus on good, healthy meals. And the good news is most people, we live in a day and age where there's a lot of education. So if you were to ask someone on the street, hey, what's better for you, a lean chicken salad or a Sunday with extra toppings, most people are going to say, hey, I'm going to pick the salad, which is good. So the delta is just getting accountability and making sure you actually follow a plan.
Yeah, follow a plan. And one of the things I found is just like change the options you have available at home. Like my addiction for the longest time was Cheez-Its. I just freaking love Cheez-Its, right? They're stupid little crackers and there's nothing, there's no nutritional value at all. But like I had to find something that was like, it was the mouthfeel and the texture and the crunch and everything of having something like that. Is finding a good nut replacement. For me, it was walnuts with a little bit of avocado oil and salt is, and we'll eat walnuts all day long, which I know I probably shouldn't eat that many of them either way. But anyways, it's replace something that is not as great for you with something that's better, that still gives you the same kind of like satisfaction has been really helpful for me.
Well, it's about reverse engineer. I think you said something so brilliant. It's like, take a step back. And if you have some sort of addiction or if you have a guilty pleasure that you go to, why, what's the why behind it? And then figure out some commonalities and maybe a healthier option that you can take and replace that would be to your point. And then the secondary thing is don't kid yourself. The worst time to go to the grocery store is when you're hungry. So if you're going to the grocery store and all of a sudden you're thinking of all these amazing options, these unhealthy options, you're like, I can just have this, that, the other, but I'm not going to eat that much. If you take the Cheez-Its home, guess what, my friend? You are going to eat the Cheez-Its. This is human nature. So the best way to avoid the Cheez-Its is do not even put them in your house. Don't kid yourself, because if they're in your house, eventually you will consume them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's where doing things like just changing the options that you have available for yourself at home is a really big benefit to hitting the nutritional side of the fitness journey. Okay, I want to shift gears here a little bit and talk about your common enemy, right? So every superhero has their arch nemesis, and it's the thing that they fight against in their world, right? In the business, it takes a lot of forms, but we like to put it in the context of your clients, right? So it's a mindset or a flaw that they come to you with that you have to fight to overcome so they can actually get the result that they came to you for. So in the world of Fit Body Bootcamp, what is the common enemy that you constantly have to fight against to help people get the result that they want?
Oh, I love this. I'm going to actually take the angle, though, because as the CEO of our franchise system, I'm going to refer to like our franchise partners as our clients instead of like our global fitness clients. And I think the common enemy from a mindset perspective, especially new franchise partners coming in, is the healthy respect for sales and marketing. And a lot of times what attracts people to the fitness industry is the built out gym, the coaching program, the weight rack, and all the bells and whistles of what an operation should look like in the culture and the community, which is really important. That's actually the product that we serve for our global clientele. However, sales and marketing is the oxygen of your business. And you don't have to love sales and marketing, but you have to respect it. It's kind of like you don't have to love the taste of water, but you have to respect it because your body needs water. So I think for us specifically, because fitness is such a passion-based business, it can be sexy at times. It can be very hard and challenging, but it definitely, there's a glamorous look to it. Sometimes franchise partners coming in have a hard time of really rewiring the brain that, yes, the operations, the equipment, all that's important, but really the most important thing is delivering a great client experience and making sure you can convert that trial into a long-term paying client, because that's the name of the game. So that's, from a mindset perspective, something that we definitely have to combat, especially early on in the new franchise partner's journey.
Ultimately, sales and marketing is how you achieve your mission. So without the sales and marketing, you don't get the opportunity to help change people's bodies, help change people's fitness journeys, and help change like the future of our generations. Like, sales and marketing is that linchpin. Without it, it doesn't happen, right? So like, the operations is important, and you can't actually deliver without the operations and like the sexy part of the business, this part that you're excited about. But without the sales and marketing, like, this part doesn't matter yet.
Richard, what I always say is this tagline: if you can't sell, you can't serve. And most of our franchise partners, all of them, they want to serve, they want to help, they want to give back. But unless you can sell, you can't serve. So I said it a different way, kindred spirits for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for me, it was a long time journey for me to get over the perception that sales is a negative thing, right? More broadly, that profit is a negative thing. So you see that a lot. And I know one of the things you talk about is fighting for capitalism. And
yes,
for whatever reason, in our world, the default narrative about entrepreneurship is that entrepreneurs are villains, right? And like,
right,
movie or TV show that you watch, the bad guy is always some variation of entrepreneur spills oil and ducks for money, right? It's the common story that we get told all the time, and we see in our TV shows, we see in our books, and we see on social media, right? Because that's the story that sells, right? But it's not the common story. The common story is entrepreneurs build businesses of integrity to put their value out in the world. And one of the things that I think is super important is learning to not just respect profit, but to love it and to seek it and to build a company that is incredibly profitable so that you can continue to serve your mission and to make people's lives better. And part of that is learning how to master sales and like where sales is not just a tool in your business, but it is how you take someone from having a problem to having a solution. Sales is how you connect problems and solutions. And I want to get your thoughts on those kind of things. And I know it puts part of your mission to fight for capitalism.
Yeah.
Fit into to your mission.
Oh, it fires me up so much. And actually, I think I had a huge big aha, Richard, because there's this narrative that entrepreneurship is bad, capitalism is bad, and really profit is bad. When I take a look, step back, profit is actually the byproduct of you producing more than you consume. Okay, that's profit. So if your business does not offer more to the world, if it actually takes more than it produces, then you don't have profit. You should, by default, be out of business. Businesses and entrepreneurs, what they do is they're the ones who have the vision. They take the big risk, okay? You have to deliver value first. This is what I love about capitalism. This is what I love about entrepreneurship, because you take the risk, you take the action, you create the value first and foremost. You have to lead with value first, and then only when you lead with value, then you get repaid. where a socialistic or the extreme version is the communist system, you take first and then what's left is that. But eventually, if everyone takes, the whole economy takes first, there's going to be nothing in terms of goods and services from an abundance perspective. So I love what you're doing here in the sense of using the comic book and that theme and kind of telling the story of villains and heroes. I do believe entrepreneurs, they're misunderstood. They take risks, they add value, they produce more, they give more to the economy. And then what they get in return is the profit, which is a good thing. So I could probably talk to you all day about this, but that's my strong belief and why I love entrepreneurships, because taking a step back, government certainly is an organization of people. Actually, government is the ultimate corporation, if you will. And you need government. Okay, you need a referee, but the referee is not going to be solving problems. Entrepreneurs are the ones who are solving problems, taking risks and pushing our human race forward, if you will. So that is my strong stance on pro-capitalism, pro-profit.
So I have a more esoteric question for you on just entrepreneurship in general. So our culture rightly holds up first responders, our military veterans, and other people like that, doctors, like as heroes. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? They deserve that sort of mantle. And then you look at entrepreneurship, and almost universally, entrepreneurship is held up as villainous, right? Business and profit is held up as villainous. And on an intro to our show, we actually have a little thing that says, hey, we think entrepreneurs are actually incorrectly categorized as villains, right? It's like the message is that they're some of the biggest unsung heroes as entrepreneurs, because almost every progress that you've seen, right? The chairs that you're sitting in, the way that we're communicating right now, every single item that you touch on a daily basis, and it doesn't matter what it is, right? The tile on your floor, all of it at some point was touched and handled and created by an entrepreneur, literally everything. Where do you think the disconnect is culturally for entrepreneurship being held up as villainous when it is, in fact, the reason why we have the lifestyles and the education and the research and everything we know, even in your world in fitness, all of it comes out of entrepreneurship at some point. So where do you think that comes from?
That's the million-dollar question. One, first and foremost, I think the education system has failed us in many different ways, especially the last 50 years. So I think there's some indoctrination from our school system that is really kind of showcasing really bad ideas. Not all professors, not all school, not all, I guess, courses and piece of curriculum, but what I definitely see. The other thing, I think it's just a symptom of human nature, because let's face it, we don't like to see someone with a ton of money and then someone who has literally sleeping under the bridge. No one likes to see that. So it's very easy to take a look back. And then when you see someone who's added so much value, created different products and services to be the solution, to your point, of all human nature's issues, and then they make a lot of money for that. Look at Elon Musk as an example. It's easy to see like, okay, look at him. He has all this money. That's not fair. What I would say is the amount of value he's produced in the marketplace has been so superior. He does deserve what he's basically been able to create. And that's unfortunately sometimes a very controversial view. So I think there's a few different roots of it. Number one, the education system, especially when there's a lot of professors that are teaching theory because they haven't been in the marketplace. They haven't been leading companies. They haven't been adding value from that perspective. They're really teaching things on theory. That's my one aspect. The second aspect is human nature. We default wanting things fair and equal to all, which makes sense. But unfortunately, the reality of the situation, it's not. And people who take big risk, who invest a lot of money and who produce value to the world, they should, in my humble but strong opinion, they should be rewarded way more than someone who doesn't take risk, who basically takes a step back and takes the easy street, if you will. So that's a loaded question, if you will. And there's probably a lot of different reasons for it, but those are the two that come to the top of my mind.
Yeah. And it's really interesting discussion. And we'll talk probably a little bit more about that in the next question, but capitalism has raised more people out of poverty than anything in the world. Right. It has dramatically changed the course of history over the last 150, 200 years for the better. Right. Like if you go back 200 years ago, like I wouldn't have lived 200 years ago. I would have died of strep throat. Right. I've had strep throat like 100 times every single time that it's product of capitalism that I live today. Right. That's just really baseline stuff. But like capitalism changed the world for the better. And it changed the course of human history, removed slavery, gave women rights to vote, and gave equal opportunity to everyone. And it's such a huge benefit to the world. And I don't know how we make that shift culturally. And that's the reason why we do this podcast, is I think storytelling is one of the only ways that we can shift culture. So that's why we use this medium to tell stories and to get more and more of these stories out. So that's our contribution to it. And I know for everyone, you can see I got a big flag up in my background. That's part of, it's just a support of capitalism, right? Worthwhile about this experiment we're doing here. that's sort of part of our mission here. I think that drives just right into my next question is your driving force, right? So the flip side of your common enemy is your driving force, right? Just like Spider-Man fights to save New York, or Batman fights to save Gotham, or Google fights to index and categorize all the information, or we fight here to change the narrative of entrepreneurship. What is it that you fight for at Fitbody Bootcamp? I know we've mentioned already two of your missions. There's one other on your list, defending free speech, but what's your mission at Fitbody Bootcamp and in personal?
Mission is to inspire fitness and change lives. So obesity, disease, okay, is really our opponent. That is our villain. And that's why we're so excited to have launched over 10 years ago an incredible fitness brand that was now going through exponential growth, even on the other side of the pandemic, when that was a big wake-up call for people that, hey, like, your health is important. Taking care of yourself is important. Locking down and being in isolation and doing the things that were actually provided as solutions, that's not it. You actually have to take personal responsibility for your health, for your fitness. So that's our big mission at Fitbody Bootcamp, is to inspire fitness and change lives every day. Personally, my core value is freedom. So we're very much aligned, which I'm just getting really excited about. And I think when you flip on the other side of freedom is oppression. And I think the opposite of capitalism is communism, on the very extreme example, but socialistic type of behavior. For whatever reason, I feel that's been my big mission. And it's been a recent kind of evolution, although there's been a lot of things that have happened. But for whatever reason, I've taken a step back and I've realized, like, capitalism has gotten a bad name. We talked a little bit about here. And from my viewpoint, capitalism provides freedom. It overcomes oppression. This is also what I've seen as of late, that the First Amendment, which is so important, of free speech is freedom, right? Freedom to express your thoughts and your feelings. And I think that's so important because I'm a believer in humanity. I believe that if we're all able to have a forum where we can discuss our ideas, good ideas, bad ideas, I believe humanity will eventually scope out the bad ideas and the good ideas will rise. However, the opposite is true. If you don't have a situation, or if you don't have an environment where you can freely speak and freely exchange ideas and listen to everyone, have a culture of feedback, then what happens is, and we see this, okay, in communism and socialism, there's a feeling of fear. There's a feeling of censorship. And we saw this even in COVID, government censorship, which is a very scary thing that actually is oppressive type behavior. So for me, I strongly believe that if we create an environment of freedom that overcomes oppression, then good ideas will continue to emerge and bad ideas will die, where the opposite is true. If we don't have that environment, eventually bad ideas will sneak through, and that will actually be a big challenge for human nature and human prosperity. And when you break it down, why freedom is important to me is because I want humans, I'm a humanitarian, I want our human civilization to continue to prosper.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I know one of the things I think important to me is, you mentioned defending free speech. And I think free speech is linchpin for humanity's survival. Like, I don't think people understand it. People like free speech and they're like, oh, what if someone says something mean?
Yeah.
The free speech is one of those things that I don't think people quite understand how potent it is. So you see things like what happened during the pandemic, and you talk about oppression versus freedom. Three masks is better than none, which is ridiculous. You find out actually that a fit, healthy body is significantly stronger at overcoming sicknesses than three masks ever would be, which is, you know, ties right into your mission for the fitness as well. But we're hearing a lot of things right now about AI and technology growth, and every single category of technology is expanding at such a rate that, like, humanity is not really ready for it, kind of thing. And I think the reality is that, like, we are on the precipice of either destroying ourselves or solving all the world's problems forever, kind of thing. It's like where we diverge here. And I think the divergence is free speech. If we shut down free speech, we are going to destroy ourselves with everything that's happening with technology. And if we don't, if we push free speech into every corner of human existence, we will figure out how to take these things with AI and take these things with everything else. And we're going to solve all the world's problems a lot faster than I think people are ready for. That's where I'm at on it. I think if you were going to narrow down to the one thing that we have to defend against anything else, free speech is it, because that's the linchpin.
I agree so much. If you look at this, and it's interesting, I visited last year in 2023 Auschwitz, which was, for your viewers, probably shouldn't know this, but it was Nazi Germany, Hitler's most deadly concentration camp. And the first thing Nazi Germany did at this period of time, that they censored media, they took away free speech. I just met a friend, she's 57 years old, her name's Petra. She grew up in the first 23 years of her life in communist East Germany, okay? When the Berlin Wall fell, when she was 23 years old, her and her family waited 10 hours for a ticket to walk through the wall just to taste capitalism. When I asked her what it was like living in East Germany, her response was, everything was censored. You couldn't say what you wanted. There was fear. When you look at people coming from Cuban, Fidel Castro regime, if coming from Venezuela, there's one commonality. You can't speak freely. And when you can't speak freely, bad ideas rise to the surface and good ideas die. So to your point, especially in a new age that we're in with AI and just a lot of different exciting opportunities, but also challenges, we need to be able to have a platform. This is why I'm so grateful and a huge Elon Musk fan of purchasing Twitter and having, you know, Twitter X is the platform of free speech. And this is what I love about it. It's okay if someone says you something you don't agree with. That's okay. That's the element of free speech. You should have the right to say that. But again, going back to my initial thought behind it, good ideas will continue to move forward. Bad ideas will die because I believe in human nature. When we have the platform and the linchpin, if you said, to express ourselves freely, that is a good situation long-term for humans.
Yeah, it goes right back to like my personal mission is in the storytelling space. Like I mentioned before we got started, we run a podcast company. And it's all about storytelling. What is like human beings, like their number one superpower, like as a race, I would put it as storytelling, right? Storytelling is it's our ability to pass knowledge on to one another. And a lot of what technology is doing for us is it's allowing us to get better and better at storytelling and storytelling en masse. That's how we pass knowledge from one generation to the next. Anytime you get into restricting free speech, what you're initially doing is you're destroying our ability for storytelling. And storytelling is, for better or worse, it is the thing that makes humans a super race, right, on our planet. There's no competition for us on this planet, and it's because of storytelling. And storytelling is, we're only capable of exercising that superpower with free speech.
That's a good look at it, because you're thinking from an entrepreneur perspective, you're thinking from a marketing perspective, a storytelling perspective, which I absolutely love. Everything you just said, I agree with you so much. I look at it also a different way from a leadership perspective. When I'm leading a company, what I've been in situations where you have bad leaders who people are like literally walking on eggshells. They can't actually share their feedback. When you don't have a strong culture of feedback, then eventually oppression happens and bad leadership subsides. Where if you're a strong leader and you have the ability to create a culture of feedback where people can share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you don't agree with it, eventually good feedback helps the organization continue to move forward. So I think from a leadership perspective, you think from a storytelling, a marketing perspective, but really all signs lead to Rome. And what we're both agreeing on is we need a continued open platform where human nature can storytell, can share ideas, can provide strong feedback, which creates more prosperity.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I love that. We do a whole podcast just on that.
So
my next question for you is just a practical question. I call it the hero's tool belt, right? And just every superhero has their tool belt with their awesome gadgets, like their batarangs or their web slingers or their magical hammer that they spin around and fly with. I'm going to talk about the top one or maybe two tools that you use every day in your business. Could be anything. Could be your notepad, could be your calendar, could be your marketing tools, something you use for your actual delivery of service, something you think is essential to getting your job done on a daily basis, lets you grow fastest growing fitness company in the US. What was one of those tools for you?
Communication would be probably the skill set that I've had to continue to develop from a leadership lens to continue to spread our message. So anything, any tool, social media, this platform right here that allows me to be able to communicate and share messaging, storytell to your point, has been very beneficial. More from a tactical, this is kind of boring, but this is a tool that's literally changed the game for me in the last 2 years. Organizations stumbled upon the project management tool, Asana, which sounds so basic, but if you haven't heard of Asana or there's many other project management tools, that tool alone has increased my level of efficiency, my productivity, my execution, and there's stars and there's fireworks. They're very excited. Your system is excited about Asana as well. But I was just talking about this with my wife yesterday, and that's changed the game for me in the last 2 years.
For me, we use ClickUp, which is another project management system very similar to Asana. And project management for us was the whole operation side of the business. To your point, you have to have the operations in order to do the sales and marketing. It was getting all of our operations dialed in our project management system allowed us to 8x our business in a year. And it was like one of those things that was like, project management is project management. You got to do, it's just one of those boring things you have to do. But when you realize like there is a superpower to doing project management well and to having tools that allow you to do it. And like, I tell people all the time, we're like in a golden age of business right now. You can pick up tools like Asana or ClickUp or Trello or Monday.com for $10 a month per user kind of thing.
Yeah.
Go back 20 years ago, didn't even exist.
Right.
Now it just allows you to run an incredibly efficient operation. So like, I agree with you, operationally, project management systems, they're worth their weight in gold, and they're all charging less than they probably should for the amount of value they provide to companies.
Totally. I've felt a little weird because it's not sexy. It's not something that's like, oh my goodness, that sounds sexy and exciting, but it's just very practical from an organizational execution perspective. It's been a game changer. And you're a podcasting guy. One of the things that's really specifically our project management tool in Asana has helped our media team build out like a flow. We have three videographers. We have a project manager. That flow in itself has just, even the last 6 months, has gained so much efficiency and growth from the business. So we're definitely on the same page there.
We do podcast post-production for 30 plus shows like this one, right? And so like,
oh, wow.
To manage the amount of video and audio and social media posts and everything that we have, we couldn't do it without a project management system, right? Like it wouldn't operate at the scale we operated at. So it's a lot of times like businesses come to us, process look like, and we show them our project management system. And they're like, oh, that's why we hire you. Because we built out the project management system for it. It sounds like internally, but like, man, you just can't manage the type of content that you need to run in today's like social media forward world without having a good project management system to help with your content marketing. So that's why we asked the question too, right? Because it's unsexy, but those things that like 80-20, probably 80% of business is unsexy stuff, right?
Yeah, yes, you know? So true.
So, you know, we always like to start there.
Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built that powers The Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Pushbutton Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. You're listening to The Hero Show, unlocking the power of influence and success.
So I got one last question for you as we wrap this up, and it's your guiding principles, right? So one of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never ever kills his enemies. He only ever takes them to Arkham Asylum. And I just learned recently that apparently Spider-Man always pulls his punches because he's afraid of killing his enemies because he's so strong. So I want to find out as we wrap the interview, the top one, maybe two principles that you run your business by today.
Ooh, I love that. For me, not necessarily run my business, but it's everything starts with me, but I'm a product of my product. I work out every day, do the same things that I teach. And that literally has just changed the game for me in so many ways, from a productivity, from a mindset, from an energy, from a leadership perspective, and also from a moral authority perspective, to your point about a guiding principle. When I'm the leader of the organization and I'm encouraging our global clients to get fit, to work out, to eat well, it's just mission critical that I follow that same guiding principle. So for me, moral authority, walking my walk, has made all the difference. So it starts with me on a daily basis and really just in making sure that I execute the same coaching that I'm delivering. First and foremost, from a baseline perspective, that's my first guiding principle. And the second thing is interesting. You talked about kind of my kryptonite, if you will, which is alcoholism and addiction. And I found this 12-step program. The guiding principle of the 12-step program is that it's a program of rigorous honesty. And at first, when I joined this program, I thought to myself, what does being honest have anything to do with me not drinking alcohol? But now experiencing the program for a few years, I realized that has everything with stop drinking alcohol. So for me, living an integral, a moral-driven life, and also a life of being very honest, is very important to me. So those are some guiding principles that have shaped my ability to execute, and there's really been a ripple effect of my organization.
Yeah. So I love the second one for one reason. I love that we run our business with an integrity, but we're like 250 episodes into this podcast, somewhere around there. And probably 80% of the people we've asked that question to have included integrity in some form as one of their guiding principles. And it always just struck me how cool that is, that the overwhelming majority of businesses operate from a place of integrity, because they have to, right? That's the way capitalism works, right? It's value for value. So it's the way the business, you have to run that way. I think it's one of the most key like changers as we're telling these stories for people. The more people listen, the more people understand that entrepreneurs really, they have to operate from a value first integrity standpoint in order for them to earn a profit. I think that'll help change the cultural perception of entrepreneurship. I think that's like one of those linchpin things. And then on the other side, the walking the walk, I just have a funny story for that. We run a podcast post-production company and we run this podcast, The Hero Show, obviously, and we got several hundred episodes on it. And like our whole agency, we never even mentioned that we ran this podcast. Like it's not on our blog, it's not on our site, like nothing on there. And so like our clients are like, what do you guys do for podcasting? We're like, oh, maybe we should show them that we actually do this every single day. We walk the walk ourselves. So we're fixing
totally.
But yeah, it's one of those things that like to operate in integrity, you have to actually do the things that you say you're going to do, which we do on our company, but we actually run more than one podcast, but we weren't telling any of our clients about it. It wasn't on our website or any of the stuff.
Totally. Love that. Going back to that first point though, about entrepreneurs and leading integrity, you're in it, the bad narrative, if you will. I've been fortunate, just like you, to hang out and befriend other CEOs. And what I do know to be true is the other CEOs that I hang out with, they're men and women of integrity. They walk their own talk, because what happens is when you execute value for value, to your point, you get more business. The opposite is also true. If you're ripping people off and you're not following through on your promises, eventually your team's going to leave. People don't want to work with people like that. So going back to the mission of really highlighting entrepreneurs in a very strong light, in my experience, the most successful entrepreneurs, the most successful leaders and change makers are people that walk their own talk. They're very honest and they execute. They deliver on what they talk, because that is so important from an integrity and a long-term success of the organization. So just to put a bow on my thought, my overview, and then your kind of guiding principle, we're definitely aligned here. And this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got one last thing for you. I think it's a great place to wrap our interview. But I do finish every interview with something I call the Heroes Challenge, which I think is useful. You were just saying you talked to a bunch of other CEOs. And the Heroes Challenge is simple. We do this to get access to stories we might not otherwise find on our own, because not everyone is out doing the podcast rounds like you and I might do. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network who you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on the Heroes Show? First person that comes to mind.
Awesome. First person that comes to mind is a gentleman named Jack Daly, who I befriended in 2023. He's the new CEO and owner of TRX, which is a mega equipment-based education company in the fitness industry. And why I love his story, his journey, he went to school for engineering. He's from the East Coast. He eventually wound his way up in Wall Street. So it was very successful from a financial perspective, a fulfillment perspective, and got out of that game recently. He's 50, in his late 50s, and he thought to himself, you know what? Like, what am I going to do for the next few chapters of my life? I have all the money that I want. I want to do something passionate, be able to give back and help people. And that's the reason that he acquired the company and within the fitness industry. He's doing great things, just relocated the company from California to South Florida. He's really crafting and taking out a lifestyle journey and going back to the walking walk and being a passion-based business and being very successful entrepreneur for all those reasons and more. Jack Daly from TRX would be my recommendation.
Awesome. We'll see if we can reach out later and maybe get an introduction to him, see if we can get him on the show. I just love that, right? One of the things that I was at a mastermind event this weekend, and one of the guys I was chatting with, he talked about being able to move from giving to get, which is where a lot of entrepreneurs start, to being able to get to the point where you can give to give. That sounds like where he's at, right? He's reached that point in his business where he's like, he's giving to give instead of giving to get. So that's cool. So in comic books, there's always a crowd of people at the end who are cheering and clapping for their acts of heroism. So as we close, we want to know our analogous to that is, where can people find you? Where can they light up the bat signal, so to speak, and say, hey, Bryce, I'd love to come be a part of the Fit Body Bootcamp, maybe as a student or a franchisee. Where are the right places to reach out? And then who are the right types of people to actually reach out and ask for your assistance?
Appreciate it. Anyone wants growth, entrepreneurship, wants to be a better version of themselves. I'm a podcaster as well. You can find my podcast called the Fitness CEO Podcast, where I teach about business, about growth, about entrepreneurship, about mindset, about free market capitalism, all the things that we talked about and more. And then from a social media perspective, my handle is Real Bryce Henson, not to be confused with Fake Bryce Henson, but you can find me on all the major platforms there. And then lastly, if you're looking to find a little bit more about Fit Body Bootcamp, which you can find in other sites that are shared, our website's fitbodybootcamp.com, and that would be the best place to find us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on today, Bryce, and sharing your story. It's been a fascinating conversation. I love how much we sort of like jive on a lot of these concepts and whatnot. And best of luck to you going forward. Do you have any final words of wisdom for my audience for this stop record button?
First and foremost, thank you so much. This has been an awesome conversation, Kindred Spirits. And I always finish my podcast with this. Remember that no one is coming to save you. You must save yourself, and the time is now. Richard, appreciate you, my friend.
Agreed. Thank you very much, Bryce.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.